Welcome back to The Basics with E-commerce Intelligence. We're going to be talking about how to avoid falling into the same traps as everyone else.
Yeah. So common mistakes that businesses make on Amazon.
Yeah. Or common mistakes that businesses make that they think they've done the right thing is the difference, I think, in what we're trying to get across. And I think I would start with pricing and repricing tools, because for me, I would go as far as saying, with my very sort of opinionated way that I can be sometimes about Amazon, I think repricing tools are useful at all to any brand selling on Amazon.
Why?
Well, I think the problem is, when we've talked earlier about the buy box and making sure that people are in that position of having their business, the one there when they want to click on the add to basket and they buy that item. And one of the ways people do that is by being, they think, the cheapest, which accounts for a large portion of it, but we know there's other things, including having the Prime badge, who you are as a seller, the reviews and the scalability of your business and how well you're doing. But people will use repricing tools, which you can kind of install from Amazon, people sell them, to allow you to be cheaper than your competitors. And they'll always fight this continuous fight over, it can be down to a couple of pence, can't it, by being the cheapest. Mm-hmm. There are a couple of tools out there now, which I mentioned years ago they should have done, where they were repricing upwards. So they would, instead of it being a race to the bottom, some people will have tools now that allow them to get to the point where this tool thinks that they will keep the buy box before they eventually won't and someone else will get it cheaper. The problem with repricing tools is it all falls down to the whole conversation we had on another podcast about margins. And I think people will try and climb to grab that sale, but won't consider the margins. And this goes back to what we were saying earlier about you need to understand your margins if you're going to sell successfully on Amazon, which falls down to the fundamental trap of selling on Amazon is getting and understanding margins. And as soon as you involve a repricing tool, you can set the parameters. You can say, well, I want to go down to 5% of my margin, and then my upwards will be 20, 25%. But the problem is that constantly changes. Do you fully know those costs that are involved? And what's the outcome of that going to be? Because if you fall below that point of 5% and someone else takes your buy box, what decision do you then make? Mm-hmm. Do you just say, I won't keep it on there, or do I remove it? And if that's the case, get that product off Amazon.
But it's also the aspect, there's differences with price that then change your referral fees and change your FBA fees. And so if you're then repricing, and it could be more profitable for you to be slightly cheaper, but then if it's repricing up and down, you could then be losing out on margin because you've gone under. So for example, with certain referral fees in the grocery category, if you're over a certain price or under a certain price, you get a different referral fee. Yeah. And a repricing tool is never going to take that into consideration. And so therefore your margin is constantly changing, and you're then going to be losing out on margin because you're going one or other the other way. And I think as well, Amazon have the tool, don't they, where you can just match the competitive price consistently. And that's just completely unautomated. That doesn't take in margin at all. That is just saying, I want to win the buy box, so put me at the featured offered price, which is the one with add to cart and buy now. It's the price of whoever's winning that currently. You're going to match that to try and win it back. And I mean, that's in my opinion, the most pointless thing that you could do, because especially if you've got a lot of competition on there, it's just going to constantly reprice it to be the lowest possible, but it could just keep getting lower and lower, almost like a spiral effect of everyone just going a little bit cheaper, that then you end up making no money at all, or it could even be negative margin that you're then you're losing money on every purchase.
Absolutely. And
so
what's the point?
Exactly.
This is a conversation we've had so many times, isn't it, with businesses that, and we see it regularly, don't we, when we've just had Black Friday, Cyber Monday, we've seen it before with certain deals and offers, and people go full all out with great sales offers and trying to get huge volume of sales. Unless that product, that Amazon product, is a new product where you're trying to build credibility, history, get good customer reviews, for me, I think it's totally pointless. I think you end up investing time and cost in trying to acquire a sale for the sake of acquiring a sale. And that falls exactly the same into pricing wars and the like, and I just don't get it. I mean, there's businesses out there that'll argue with me regularly on LinkedIn saying, well, we want it for, you know, we want to get the sales volume, we want that, and you go, but why? What's the point of that? You know, we regularly see a huge uplift in sales from Black Friday, from Prime Day, from all these other areas. And we don't go all out to say to our customers, look, discount your products heavily. You know, we know that things like advertising costs go up because everyone's fighting for that, and that's an intrinsic part of running the business. But the margin side of things stays the same, or relatively close. Mm-hmm. But we see that natural increase anyway. I mean, we had over Prime Day, it was about a 24% increase over that weekend. And we didn't have to oversell our clients to say, reduce your prices, try and get big volume of sales. We didn't need to do that.
I think the way that I've always worked it with clients that I've worked with Black Friday is to do a promotion or have a sale price just live. So to a customer coming on Amazon, yes, that big banner of Black Friday deal is definitely going to be a conversion help because they think, oh, perfect, this is an Amazon Black Friday deal. But especially purchasing behaviors anyway on Amazon, as long as you see that discount value, you're going to associate that with, oh, it's a Black Friday sale. It doesn't necessarily need that banner. And so just having that small discount is going to benefit you anyway. You're probably going to see an increased sales volume from that. But you get to control what the margin is
exactly
on that product.
Because
you can go,
yeah,
do my calculation and go, cool, I want to put 5, 10% off, whatever the percentage may be. But you know what you're making from that sale. Whereas with the Prime deals or Lightning deals, unless you know your margin completely accurately and you can factor
big
that
margin
into your calculations, you may be losing money. And as you said, you're spending X amount to get the same amount back in sales or in margin, that it's counterproductive. You've not lost or gained anything.
And knowing your numbers as well is very, very key to another problem I think that a lot of businesses fall into, which is making adjustments to things on Amazon or their listing or their advertising, which are not actually attributed to what the problem really is. An example of that is just switching advertising off because advertising is not working.
But also not having advertising is also another, on the flip side,
the
not
flip
having
side,
it at all.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or
turning
advertising off because they just see it as an extra cost rather than a developing cost.
Or my product is now ranking here, therefore I can switch it off and done. And it doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
And like you were saying, if a product is at the core of it, I know we've mentioned this on another podcast, if the quality, if the price, if there's something fundamentally wrong with that product and you're just spending loads and loads of money on advertising and you're not looking at the data correctly, you could be very, you know, a mistake they typically make is just to put more money into advertising to try and get it to get there quicker. But you're just putting money, just throwing away money. It's not going to actually fix the problem. So yeah, making adjustments to certain areas on, let's say, whether it's advertising or pricing or whether you're using a reprice at all or not, I think it is a real common one that a lot of businesses make.
It's probably worth us mentioning as well why you shouldn't just turn your advertising off, because in a logical world, you go, well, my product's now ranking really well, I'm getting sales, I don't need to be spending £2,000-£5,000 a month on advertising. But it's probably worth just kind of going into why we never recommend doing that, because of what we've seen in the past couple of years.
Yeah, so obviously the way advertising impacts your organic sales and your organic rank, so the sales you get from not advertising the actual product, advertising will massively increase that for you to the point where we've seen it where it was switched off on an account and it was 58% of the organic sales, so nothing to do with advertising, the organic sales lost because all the advertising was turned off.
Absolutely.
So they lost all their advertising sales, of course, by turning them off. But on top of that, 58% of just their natural organic sales just went.
Yeah.
And that was in the space of 3 weeks.
It tanked, didn't it? And we've seen this a couple of times before. And also at the same time that happened, there was a few white papers from some really big agencies that came out on the same level. And we know that because advertising is so important to Amazon as its, you know, its core business. It's its biggest money maker as its ads platform. And that is a really important thing. Yeah. In terms of other things away from the pricing and advertising side, I think another thing that we see, a huge trap that happens, is actually for all brands, any brand globally, that isn't on Amazon, and that is not utilizing Amazon's brand registry program. Because without that, other people, it's becoming tighter and harder to do as we speak at the moment, but other people have been able to exploit that in terms of not being the brand owner or potentially a brand giving access to one of their sellers, manufacturers, wholesalers, distributors, etc. And someone else coming in and basically saying, right, we're going to control the Amazon product listing because of the brand registry system, which we've not delved into too much here, but it's effectively the database of people who own all brands, all trademarks within Amazon. Globally, it happens in the US and in the EU and the UK. But it's probably worth mentioning that all brands, regardless of whether you're selling on Amazon or not, if you are a retail brand of some sort, you should be on there. Your IP team should be on there, whether you're a multi-billion pound brand or you are a startup with a trademark. You need to make sure you've got control, and for various different reasons.
Was it 4 or 5 years ago? You didn't really need that much evidence to say to go into it. It's changed.
You could say that you were Cadbury, you could say you were Nike, you could say whoever pretty much, and the controls have changed over time so that it's now very regimented, which is the right thing to do, because we know from working with brands that we have, they have issues and things that we need to resolve for them on their behalf.
Same with barcodes though as well. That's what the same principle is, like, 3-4 years ago, you could technically list with any barcode, whether GS1 registered or not. You didn't necessarily have to own it.
Barcodes for Ooh or something, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. There's multitudes of websites out there that take genuine GS1s, but not your own branded ones, that then resell to other businesses, and you'll list with it. And Amazon have now, in the last 12, 18 months, started to kind of tighten up that control of checking the barcode, making sure it matches with the brand name or registered address, however they're checking it internally in the back end. And if it doesn't match, your products are getting removed. And that's, I suppose, maybe falling into a trap, is you need genuine barcodes from the beginning, because it might bite you in the end later on down the line, because your listing goes, you lose all your reviews, all your sales velocity, and the listing is gone, and you'll have to restart. There are, obviously, as I said, it's tightening up now. You can't add it now without it checking. Amazon already does internal checks when you go to add a new product, but just having that set up from the get-go in the beginning is necessary. I mean, we, as you explained, we have a client that has multiple issues with EAN ownership and brand ownership, and that's just down to them not being the first to list that years ago. And I think one of the traps that we see is not being on early enough, because you think, oh, I don't need to be on there, it's too saturated, or I've already got my presence elsewhere, I don't necessarily need to be on Amazon. But we have clients that are on there even though they don't sell. Just having that brand on there and you having the control of those listings, your EANs, how you want your products to present, it doesn't matter whether you sell them. If you do, great, and you make money off it, fantastic. But at least you've got the control over your brand and what your IP is and what your trademark is. And I think that's... We have so many brand issues, don't we, that we come across?
We literally, the other week, we had quite a new client who started with us, and they weren't even aware that their brand was actually already on Amazon being sold, and it had been put on 4 or 5 years ago. And so they came to us with a brand reg problem, trying to get their brand into Amazon's brand registry, and they wouldn't allow it because it was already in, and they didn't even realize anyone had put it in. And so it was then a case of convincing Amazon that this is their trademark, this is their brand. They have the rights to do it, use all the tools and everything that comes with it on Amazon.
And you can show all the documentation, and it's still a struggle to prove it, because Amazon see time as the greatest power, and Amazon is, oh, well, they listed it first, so they must be. And you really have to show every point of documentation to go, actually, I am. Mm. Because Amazon, I mean, it's the same with contributions onto listings, isn't it? The earlier you are, if you're the first person to list it, you will have a contribution that might be stronger than the brand owner. And that's just quite a mental fact about Amazon, is that other people can have control over your brand if you weren't the first to list it. And so...
Until you've got brand registry.
Until you've got brand registry. But even still, there's still... conflicts yeah. with it, where you can still struggle to put your content in. Amazon technically state when you ask support that they'll take contributions from multiple sellers. It's not always just down to the brand owner. Obviously, you have a lot more sway to try and get that changed with support or going down brand registry. But yeah, I think.
And another problem that they do as well, because whilst we're talking about brand registry, is the how if they don't complete it correctly, how that can then be another massive problem. And it's how they will enter the trademark incorrectly, uppercase, lowercase, hyphens, things in the wrong space.
Yeah, yeah.
It'll if there's any like slight discrepancy with that, that can then throw up other big problems. So yeah, and another big trap that I think businesses fall into is rushing that process when they hear about it. Oh, right, yeah, okay, I will do that. Mm-hmm. And then they won't have done it correctly as it is the trademark. That can then throw up. That can put you 2-3 months back in the whole process of trying to get on Amazon, controlling your listing and improving your performance. It really is another big problem that we see a lot.
Imagine being a massive global international brand. You sell to manufacturers, you've never sold directly. You pay a fortune in intellectual property, solicitors, lawyers, counsel, the whole works. Millions is spent on your branding every year. Then all of a sudden someone comes along, finds a way to list a product of yours poorly with their own images, with their own descriptions and bullet points. You might have a food brand where the ingredients are wrong, and then all of a sudden that product is being represented on Amazon incorrectly because you've not done the due diligence, you've not protected the brand. And that's why it's crucial, even if you aren't interested in selling on Amazon, it's fundamentally important that that brand is represented correctly, because as we've said before, in the UK alone, you've got 14 million Prime members. They will start their shopping experience on Amazon first. They will find your brand. They might even find your brand in the supermarkets, in retailers, and go, oh, this person's selling it. Oh, that doesn't look right. Or the imagery is wrong. You know, we had this when we did the MyProtein variation. We worked with MyProtein a few years ago. We rebuilt their variations. The imagery was wrong. They'd rebranded recently. Some of the product listings that had been set up by other people had incorrect information. The flavor information was wrong. The ingredients information was wrong. And as a brand, your core element is to try and make sure that's protected, even if you have no interest in selling that product directly to the consumer. And that is a really, really big fundamental issue that I think some mega, mega brands still experience to this day.
It's the same with Knickwax, isn't it? They have multiple duplicates of listings because people have taken their product, rebarcoded it, put it on Amazon, and you end up competing almost with the exact same product, but it's someone else is selling it because you own your barcode and you sell it through that listing, but maybe 3 or 4 other duplicate listings are there, and you can't merge them because it can be quite difficult to merge on Amazon nowadays. It used to be a lot easier. And so you end up competing almost with yourself, but you don't necessarily want to sell on these duplicate listings because it's not a genuine product. I say it's not genuine, obviously it is. They're probably sourcing it from that manufacturer or that brand directly, but it's not the EAN, and it could get removed at any time. You'd lose those reviews. And so it's, you know, there are multitudes of ways that brand registry and then being early can benefit. So as you said, having those images displayed correctly. I mean, having one listing, I know you mentioned earlier on a different podcast that technically is only one listing per product. That's not technically true, because if they've been listed for longer than, say, 5-6 years, there are those problems. We've had a couple of clients, haven't we, where the whole point was to clean up that duplicate listing, to have it as just be one, because one, it's cleaner for a search. You know exactly where it is. Oh, that's the product. You go onto it, all the reviews are there. Fab, I'll buy it. Whereas they could be going to these duplicate listings and the sales going away from you. And so that you know, that's a big aspect to it too.
I think one more thing you've touched on there as well, which I was going to mention, which is reviews, where I don't think we see it as much now, but we used to a year or two ago, which is where people would think that they could kind of cheat the system by using fake reviews or getting your friends to buy your products and then leave those reviews on there. And we know...
Big trap.
Yeah. We know Amazon are very, very good with this.
Absolutely. Even though, you know, in the media, which again, I disagree with because of the data that we see and things, that still exists. There is still an element of people that are doing fake reviews or trying to buy reviews and they think that's a really good thing for their ranking of their products. I mean, we've proven otherwise. I mean, we've got a product at the moment that's number one with 5 reviews. So we know that the whole getting a massive amount of reviews is a fallacy. But that is a huge problem, is people going, what we call incentivizing them. So they will put a little slip in the box, yeah, or they'll say, you know, we'll give you money off. That's a, you know, anything like that is a huge Amazon violation.
Yeah,
of terms.
They'll kick you off.
They'll kick you off.
They do check FBA stocks. If you think can get away with it by sending it into fulfillment centers, oh, it's in the box, it's fine. I mean, we've seen it with things like even just when they remeasure the item sometimes to check the dimensions are correct. Mm-hmm. As soon as they find that, that's a massive no-no, a flag against your account. It's not, oh, it's inside the box, they'll never look. The possibility is there.
People try and blur the lines and make it really subtle. And the truth is that very few people leave reviews. It's just the way it is. But you won't get anything further from doing that. And even in doing so, it won't give you that volume to give you that ranking. So it is a complete waste of time. Just don't do it. I haven't recommended putting slips in for years and years and years because it just doesn't have much value.
Vine is the most effective process, which is
absolutely
for a fee to Amazon, depending on how many units you enroll in FBA, they have to be in fulfilled.
And a brand owner, of course.
And a brand owner, yes. Is you pay for those reviews. It's the only legitimate way to pay for them. But if you can pay for up to 30, which is currently £140 in the UK, that has much more, well, it's one less risk anyway. You get a higher number of return rates within those first 30. And then we always say anyway, isn't it, around 20 to 25. Above that, we then don't see an increase in conversion due to reviews. So as you just said, what, 5
diminished
reviews
returns
and number one bestseller, but anywhere between 20 and 25, you are comfortably.
Another problem we saw with Vine though, was that when we've seen clients come to us and they've just put one in.
Mm.
Because what happens when you do that?
Well, you can only do it once.
You can't
never
do it
enroll
again.
It. So, I mean, the only benefit, the only reason I would actually say to do a lower amount, though, at the moment, is you do get 2 for free with the new tiering. So you get 2 for a free enrollment, 10 for, I think, £70, could be £60, and then 30 for £140. So if it's a high-cost item or you physically don't have the margin necessarily to give away loads for free, I do think 2 is worth a benefit. But I see the point. You can't do it again. So
if you think I'll put 2 in now, see how it goes, and put more in, you can't.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And another huge caveat for Vine, because people think, again, it's an easy way in. What we spoke about in our first podcast, and we'll probably bring this up a few times again, is down to a qualitative product. Because people may assume poorly Vine, oh, we'll get instant 5-star reviews. And the truth is that Vine customers are probably the most critical of all Amazon customers. And if your product
is... They put images on there, so if the product packaging is poor or it arrives badly, it's going to be on the listing
absolutely
forever.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, if you've got a poor product, they will tell you. Yeah. And that's a really cool thing with Vine, is they are very... very honest, very honest. And that's a really key thing.
That's why it's key, because also customers don't necessarily know what Vine is. I mean, they do try and make a little bit of a comment of this is a Vine, they got the product for free.
Yeah.
However, for the most part, customers will just see that as a normal review.
Absolutely.
And that's why it's good. It can have its negatives. But if you've got a good product, which, I mean, most of our clients, I mean, all of our clients
do.
I say most, all of our clients
do. We wouldn't take them off if they didn't.
But it also then just proves quality if they can be brutally honest, and a customer's going to take that, especially with the images, really lengthy descriptions. I mean, if I'm looking at a review and it has a couple of words, really good, you don't really trust it as much as if someone's gone really into depth, maybe, you know, pointed out pitfall, but for the most part, it's really good and has images. I'd trust that way more than having a 1 or 2 word review, which is exactly what the Vine program is for. The lengthy reviews, images, sometimes video. And so, I mean, I know we've kind of gone off the point of, say, falling into traps, but it is also...
It is. It is the trap of people. Again, reviews are a trap. People trying to get volume of reviews because they see, again, poor YouTube videos of people saying, get reviews, do this, or these kind of really bad sort of social media groups where they're trying to incentivize you to pay for product reviews, or you've seen it before where people were getting products delivered to other people's houses, or this kind of really weird setup. But it's really important to mention with Vine. Vine is it's a legitimate program. They are Amazon customers, and you have to basically do a lot of buying, a lot of reviewing to be enabled for the program. So it's not a dodge. It's not some sort of like hack. Amazon Vine is a very detailed thing, and like I said, they are very brutal with their and it gives good. It gives good content. It gives good structure around a product, because you do get some level of feedback onto your product. And like I said, if a product is poor, a Vine reviewer will tell you straight up. So it does give good feedback to those clients.
But customers also get to choose what they get from Vine.
Exactly,
so
yeah.
It's not a... I suppose this is going back to misconceptions, is if you enroll it into Vine, don't just think that any random 30 people will get it and then they might not understand your product and then, oh, well, they'll leave a bad review.
Mm.
You will select it. So if I want your glass of water that's in front of you, I will select, well, I can't, okay. Mm-hmm. But I'll choose to have that because I want that from Vine. If I'm a Vine voice, I'm not then going to go and choose to get a sofa if I don't need a sofa or whatever the product that is being enrolled. So Vine is suitable for any product on Amazon other than adult health. There are certain caveats to that, but for the most part, any normal product that's not restricted on Amazon, you can do through Vine, and therefore, you know, you'll have, there'll be open people that choose it will be wanting your product. So the people reviewing it will give it an honest review about how they actually use it because they need it. I mean, we've had ones with kayaks and paddle boards before, and the Vine review came back fine because the person who then reviewed it actually did paddleboard and they wanted that. But, mm-hmm. you know, they wanted the product and could give an honest opinion. So
another one as well to jump onto as we move away from reviews is stocking and customers being too late to the party, putting items in too late, realize they want a shipment in for, you know, for Christmas, for Q4, and they seasonality, and there is not enough legs. Sometimes people need to really plan ahead with their stock planning, and that is a huge problem that we see, isn't it?
Yeah. Especially it's an art form in terms of being able to do it, because we know that if you're selling into FBA, we know the best way to have it is if you can always forecast what will sell through in a 90-day period, then replenish at that point, perfect, because you're going to get the best return on investment within Amazon. But it's not always easy to do that. There'll be spikes, there'll be drops, you know, and that happens. But yeah, for key seasonality periods, we will start working with our clients 3-4 months before that to make sure it is ready. They are in FBA, there, you know, and a good amount of stock to see them through 90 days. And I think you mentioned it might have been on another podcast about being overstocked is better than being out of stock. And that is, again, another misconception where people think, I must not be overstocked. But it is, we know it's worse if you go out of stock.
Said 90 days. Christmas, I would do 120. Mm. So, I mean, I would be sending in probably end of September or mid-September if possible to then last you through to mid-January. That's the stock projection that I would personally do because, great, if your sales increase and then you've got enough stock to cover you through Christmas and then you restock immediately after, fab. But if you run out of stock a couple of weeks before Christmas, especially with things like grocery or gifting or anything along that line that is peak season for Christmas or even like with Black Friday, obviously that's in the build up to Christmas anyway. So you've got to account for that or Halloween, depending on what your seasonality is. But mostly Christmas, I'd say, is where it's because the FBA centres are the most busy because every business wants to get their stock into a fulfilment centre. Yes, your seasonality might be Easter, but for the most part, you'll probably be okay because that's not fulfilment centre's peak season. But I'd do 4 months, 120 days stock. I mean, I did with a couple of clients and recommended it to other account managers, and I think it's been successful. Overstocking, yeah, you might pay a little bit extra in storage fees, but it'd be worse to be out of stock because you'll lose revenue. So
yeah.
Being out of stock is like having a half stack on Amazon, isn't it? Because without it, you know, you put all that work into all that effort. As soon as it goes out of stock, Amazon goes, I can't trust this seller. And that is the same, even if you get stuff
that's,
back
that's
in.
That's the algorithm, isn't it? It's the algorithm saying it doesn't trust that product, which then we know affects ranking, it affects sales velocity, which is all key to that algorithm.
Yeah, it is a supply chain thing. I don't think some people understand how important that is. We've had it before where people go, oh, well, I've got to do this, you know, for something else, or, oh, well, my stock will come in at this later. You can't do that because it will affect you long term. Yeah. And that's a really core thing.